Hello and welcome to God Pods, where we share faith conversations brought to you by Boston College's Church in the 21st Century Center. My name is Andrew Craig. I'm the Assistant Director of Marketing and Operations here at the C21 Center. Today, I was incredibly grateful to host a conversation with Sister Carlotta Gagliardi, a sister of St. Joseph. Sister Carlotta joined the Sisters of St. Joseph in 1954, and as we'll learn in this episode, she has since served from Boston to Peru. Enjoy. So looking back to when you first joined the Sisters of St. Joseph, or even when you were first figuring things out, was there anything that helped you discern or discover that this was where you were being called or where you were meant to be?
Well, you know, that's a difficult question to answer. And the reason I say that is I made this decision when I was in high school. I mean, we wouldn't even now think of accepting anybody right out of high school. Yeah. But you're sort of like a product of your times. And, yeah. You know, when people say that, you know, I'm not going to give some deep spiritual reason because I wasn't even deeply spiritual. I wouldn't even think of a relationship with God at that time. I'm in high school, you know. Mm-hmm. And I do think that my parents, I always say that they were the ones who made me think about service. I would say it was almost a call to compassion, you know, yeah. If you want to call it that. And my parents were unusual. I mean, they were so dedicated, so committed to the neighborhood, to the neighbors, to my relatives, you know. They would be the first ones to, you know, think about, oh, so-and-so was sick, what can I do? And they were very committed to the church. So in that sense, you know, I grew up with that model of generosity and service to other people. And then I thought, well, you know, married people can do that. Why am I looking, you know, for someplace else? And then I thought that maybe it was because my father always said, life is not something you do alone. And the thing is, this is like a group of women that, mm-hmm. you know, you could join who at the time I thought, you know, would be very into service and so forth. I didn't even think of the fact that they were, the Sisters of St. Joseph wasn't, you know, into education at sure. that time. That was their main ministry.
Was teaching. And
teaching, was teaching yeah. in schools. We had yeah. like, what, 300 schools or something in the wow. diocese. But, you know, so I didn't even think about that. Mm-hmm. But I just, it's something that you feel. This is where God wants you. I didn't yep. even think about God wanting me there. But this was, you know, what I should be doing. And I have to say that I wasn't thrilled about it and super happy about it because I was the type of a person who was very active, very involved in everything. And in high school, if, you know, if they wanted a debating, I was the debating. If they wanted this, I was there. Whatever. The parish, I was like one of the leads in the parish musical, things of that
awesome.
Nature. And speech and drama, which I took for so many years. I was in the play Little Women and all that. I was always available to join something. And even as a kid, you know, a young kid, I took tap dancing, then I mm-hmm. did ballet, did piano, which never amounted to anything, even though I took years of piano lessons. So, you know, that was my type of personality. I like just being with groups and mm-hmm. people. I just love being with people. So, you know, I think it was difficult in that sense. What am I doing, you know? And so I entered in 1954, and it was the Marian year is what they called it. We were 57.
57 sisters.
Yes,
wow.
57 at the time. And that wasn't the smallest group, because after me, they had, you know, people who had 86 in their group, you know?
Coming in.
Yes.
Wow.
Imagine. And I never regretted it. And mm-hmm. even though I always hoped for changes, because we led a very, what would I call it? Almost, no, we were isolated in one sense. You know, we didn't have much communication with the outside world, mm-hmm. let me put it that way, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think deep down, I always thought, this is going to change. This is going to change. So I started a teaching school, of course. And I remember when they gave me the first grade, I thought that was like, oh boy, freaking out, thinking they gave me the most important grade. This is the kid's first chance to come to school. And I better make it a happy one for them. They're going to have to love coming to school. So I was sort of freaking out, thinking, you know, oh my God, you know, this is a great responsibility. Because in those days, now, of course, babies leave the house as babies, you know, then it's all pre this and pre that, pre kinder. Right. And so first grade, of course, what was the first time for many children? It was my first time when I came to school was the first grade. So I thought this was, oh boy, great. What a responsibility. So then life went on from there with, you know, different ministries and so forth. So I think that was it. You know, you're never going to be like sure of anything. I always think that, you know, you discover what your vocation is as the years go on. And I'm still discovering. I mean, it's not something, you know, that it's done once and for all. There's always that discovery as you go along. And I think it's the same with any vocation. You know, you're married now, and I'm sure you're discovering what it's all about.
Yeah. Every day's a new discovery.
Exactly. It's a new experience. Yeah. Absolutely. So I think you have to be open to that, too, that you don't become stagnant.
So looking back at your time as a sister, you've served so many places. Mm-hmm. Are there any that stick out to you as just like very special or fond?
I have to say that I love my life. I have been blessed with so many extraordinary ministry. I mean, teaching the first grade, I did that for 11 years. And then, of course, the call came out to go to Peru. So that was the next 27 years. And I would have to say that perhaps was ministry that really changed my life. Let me put it that way. Because you become a stranger. All your props are taken away from you. You don't know the language. Don't know the culture. So, and that's something I think that's hard for people to do, you know? Suddenly you're in this strange land, which, you know, you're left without being able to communicate. You have no idea what each day is going to bring. And once again, we were in the school. We went there, you know, to teach in a parish school, St. Richard's Parish, after Richard Cardinal Cushing, because he was the one that asked if we would send. And there was Pope John the 23rd, of course, who asked that religious communities send a certain percentage to South America or to third world countries, let me put it that way. And so that's how we eventually got there. And we started teaching in the school. And I was the first one to move out of the school and into, we had several public schools in our parish. And religion was taught in all the schools because it was a Catholic country. It was part of the curriculum, exactly. So I went into the public schools to see about helping, you know, to train some of the teachers as far as religion went. And another thing we wanted also was to not to have, like, every year you'd have these 13 schools, 13 First Communions. We decided that they would have to all come to the parish if they wanted to receive communion, to do it on a parish level, which was a family catechetical program, which was extraordinary. And so we did accomplish that. So I have to say that, you know, we lived through this terrorism, but people were so patient. You know, you don't know the language, and they're just so patient. And I'm sure it must have been hard for them, you know, to listen to all our mistakes and what we were saying and how we were saying it. I feel blessed, too, in that the language was not a problem for me, because I grew up in an Italian household. I listened to Italian all the time, which is very similar to Spanish, now when I think about it. And then, so that wasn't a big problem for me. And then I majored French in college, which, you know, didn't do much with that. We were going to bring it into the schools, but then they kept me in the first grade, so I didn't have the opportunity to teach it, you know, so I didn't really master that at all. But I did have a flair for languages. You know, I feel so blessed to have had that opportunity, you know, to have that gift. Yeah. And then the terrorism, of course, was a big part of our lives with that Sendero Luminoso. And then they asked for the leadership of women religious asked for volunteers to go into the areas that had really been hit by the, you know, terrorists. And I volunteered for that because I felt, you know, I said to some of my prayer groups, I'm going to volunteer, I said, because we will learn, I will learn something about it, and I will represent the community so that we do put our faith into action, because it's important that people know that we have not abandoned. And that was the whole idea of the groups, to go so that the people who had suffered so much with the terrorism, everybody did, even in Lima where we were. But the thing is that to let the people know that the church has not abandoned. So we went to different villages, you know, and very primitive. It was an extraordinary experience. No sanitation. It was just an extraordinary experience. But, I mean, the whole idea is, how do you understand what's going on if you're not there? You know, sure. If you don't have the experience of living it, if you're not in it. I think that's so important. So that was an extraordinary experience for me. We were Mara sister. We went in groups of threes at a Montfortian father, who was extraordinary, a Mara sister, and myself, the three of us, and went to different villages.
And you were in Peru for
27 years. Almost 27 years.
And then did you come straight back to Boston?
Yes.
What an experience. No, thank you, though, for sharing.
It was an extraordinary experience. And Children's Hospital, too, was another extraordinary experience.
And that was back here in Boston.
That was back here after I came back. I was in a parish for a couple of years, but I found it very difficult to adjust.
From being in Peru to then coming to
to a
U.S.
different kind
parish.
Of church. Completely different kind of church. So, and that was different. Even though I tried very hard. I was out every day knocking on doors and visiting people and so forth. But it just wasn't the same to have that, you know, community idea of farming community.
And was Boston Children's Hospital, was that your looking for an opportunity, or was it presented to you?
No,
or was it more
actually,
so like you were told to
present
here?
The president of our community called me and she said, you know, Children's Hospital is looking for a bilingual chaplain. They want someone that speaks Spanish, and would you be interested? And I said, yes.
And how long were you there for?
I was there for 15 years. And I left on my own. I could have stayed there probably for another 5, 10, I don't know, years. But you had to have a balance in life. I think that's so important. And I was hours and hours at the hospital. Which, I mean, I'm not going to say it was a burden for me at all. I was happy to do it. You know, you could say that, you know, there might have been a child that was dying. And the parents would say, you know, I want my mom and dad to be here for the baptism. They live in Vermont. So I'd say, it's not about me. You know, I'm here to serve you. I'll wait as long as I have to wait for your parents to get here to do this baptism. Things like that. So, you know, you were called in maybe at 11 o'clock at night, even midnight. I went in very early to do pre-op prayers before surgeries. You have to have that balance, you know, so that you can participate in community things, be available for that, and family celebrations. Because I worked every Sunday, but I prepared people to carry on. We used to do communion services. We did have a priest chaplain, but when he was not there, we did these communion services. And I noticed all the people that came every day to the service or to the Mass. And so finally, when we first started, I was doing the communion service. And then I said, this is, you know, why am I doing this? You know, there must be some people here who could do it. So I asked them. At the beginning, I asked 4 of them, and not one of them said no.
Wow, okay. So the desire was there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When I left, I had 7 people doing the services, and they gave wonderful little homilies, and it was just great. And they're still doing it. So I think that's important to you. It's not your project. It's not yours. And you have to know that you have to prepare people to take over.
I'm sure, too, it's empowering in that sense, the people that you served or that you worked with.
I think people are already empowered. We have to let them know that. So it's just that invitation. Would you like to, you know, of course. So it was great. And then I did prison ministry, which was for me another extraordinary ministry. They were looking for somebody for the Latino inmates in Cambridge. So I did that. It was just once a week. I did that for about 12 years while I lived in Cambridge. Cambridge was a great place to live. They had so many things. You know, they had Cambridge Cares About AIDS. They had all kinds of groups. I took this police academy course. It was a 13-week course for citizens. That was amazing because it put a human face on the police. It was a wonderful opportunity to learn so much. And thank God a lot of things have changed for them, you know, as the years went on. But that was another wonderful thing. And I had the opportunity to baptize four of the inmates. They asked to be baptized, actually. So I was happy to do that. I was still at Children's Hospital in Cambridge, and I took that on. It's a wonderful ministry to people who do that. Some people do it full time, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, amazing. I have one more question, formally, with mine to whoever might be listening to this, no matter what stage they're at or who they are, why they're listening or how they came to this. Do you have any words of wisdom, advice, even just personal experience for someone who's trying to discern their own calling or grappling with how to use their time or maybe where their next step is?
People have to make their own decisions, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to ask people, I usually like to ask them, what makes you happy? I think that's so important. What makes us happy? And I think you have to go from that because you see so many people who their job is just a job. It's not a vocation. But every job should be a vocation, no matter what you're doing. And then another question I ask is like, why do you exist? You know, what is your purpose? Your existence, what is your purpose in life? And my community has given me a purpose. In the sense of they've given me a great purpose in life, which I'm so grateful for. So I think people have to think about that, you know. Think about what is their purpose in life and why do you exist, you know.
Yeah, just a little thing.
So I just, you know, usually just like to throw those questions out to people. Yeah. But I think the happiness is a big thing. You have to be happy. You have to love your life and you have to be happy at what you do. I think you have to discover that. And I, you know, it's like when people start calling. I have a couple of my nieces, like one, she went to BU because BU was the only place around that gave the anthropology. That was her big thing. And then she ended up being an educator. Like, it's sort of like, well, maybe this isn't for me. Then I have another one who went out to the University of Georgia. She wanted to do journalism. And they were very known for that. And now she's into social work. You discover all these things, you know, as you go along and finally maybe find your little niche. And I love it because they're meaningful professions, difficult professions, but meaningful. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, important. Your life, it's not a stopping place. It's not a stopping place. I think, you know, there's always, you're always on this pilgrimage. It doesn't matter how old you are. It's still there. You know, you have to, and I think you have to maintain your enthusiasm. And so forth.
Did you want to talk about this at all?
Because that was taken at Children's Hospital.
Okay.
It was given to me when I left by the clowns. And that's what I loved about it. I'm reading the word laughter.
Yeah.
And I thought they decided to do this so you think you can dance. Yes. Evidently it was a TV show. Anybody could, you know, perform. So I said, I'm going to perform. The kids were all into this Happy Feet movie.
I love that movie.
They were all into this Happy Feet. So I said, I think I'll get dressed as a penguin because it was the penguins were in Happy Feet. And one of the volunteers made me the outfit. I had a pair of tap shoes because I did the tap. Even as an adult, I took some lessons in Cambridge to sort of get myself back to it. So I got dressed up and I danced to the first song on Happy Feet. It was a nice song about the heart or something. That's what I danced to. It was so much fun.
And I love your smile on these.
I know.
The costume and your tap shoes.
Right. Somebody had taken these pictures. So when I left Children's Hospital, the clowns gave that to me all framed. And then they all wrote something on the bottom. Yeah. So what I was happy about was it's the faith and laughter thing. Mm. You know, and one of them said, laughter is music from the soul. We both have the same job.
For those listening, we'll post this picture to share.
Sure.
But I just love, I'm sure the kids loved it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they had a blast.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of God Pods. For more faith resources, visit us at bc.edu/c21 and find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at C21 Center. From all of us here at Boston College's Church in the 21st Century Center, we hope you stay well and stay inspired. Until next time, thanks for tuning in to C21 Center's God Pods.